Welcome to the preliminary results call for the 12 months ended 31st of December 2012. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to your host, Michael Carvill, Managing Director. Sir, you may begin.
Good morning, folks. Michael Carvill speaking. Welcome to Kenmare's conference call on the publication of preliminary results 2012. I have with me Tony McCluskey, Finance Director of Kenmare, and Eamonn Keenan, Marketing Manager of Kenmare Resources. What we thought we'd do is run very briefly through some slides that we have put up on the website. I think Virginia Skrosky, our Investor Relations Manager, emailed quite a few guys with PDF of this. I'll run through it pretty quickly. Tony will talk through the financial slides at the end, and we'll open the call up to your questions then as soon as we can. Just to look through to the slides and then to page three, which is our health and safety slide. As you can see from that, our health and safety record is continuing to be a positive health and safety record, even given the fact that it's a very active site, active construction site with 1,000 construction workers on it through most of the year. Turning to slide four, which is with quarterly production data, I think that we have had plenty of discussion over the year about the challenges that the company was faced in terms of production during the year. In the first half, we had extremely difficult electricity supply situation with multiple dips and brownouts and outages caused by electricity that stabilized towards the middle of the year. We had another dip in terms of electricity in September when EDM, the state utility, commissioned a static variable compensator on the line, which is a good thing, but during the process of commissioning that, it gave us some considerable difficulties. And then finally, in the last quarter, we had this climb up the side of the hill to move from the Namalope Slopes area of the Namalope zone of the ore body onto a high dunar plateau. That was particularly difficult, harder than we anticipated, causes more costs and reduced the production more than we had anticipated. So that's really the story of the mining situation during the 12 months of 2012. As far as that is concerned, we have addressed the electricity situation by commissioning a voltage stabilization device called Dip Doctor, which is being constructed on the site at the moment. We have put in capacitor banks at Nampula substation. We're putting capacitor bank at the mine itself, and we're completely refurbishing the Ultima Lockwee static variable compensator. So we anticipated that when all that is complete, that the voltage stability and the number of outages associated with voltage stability will be very significantly reduced. In addition to that, the climb up the side of the hill is effectively over, and that was the part that was associated with the big geotechnical challenges of having to create a berm on the downside slope, which contained the mining pond with all the equipment in it as we traversed up that slope. We're now turning onto the main dunar plateau. We've already seen significant improvement in mining rate and mining conditions, so we're very pleased that's actually behind us now. So just turning to page seven, just to review that, the transition onto the high dunes is substantially complete, and as I said, we have already encountered improved mining conditions. Expansion. It was a very busy year. We were doing all this and also building our 50% expansion. That expansion includes a new dredge mining pond with a new larger dredge and a new wet concentrator plant in it. That pond was filled with water and floated late January, early February, and the plants were floated late January, early February, and they are both in commissioning phase at the moment, both the dredge and the wet concentrator plant. And as far as the processing aspects of that are concerned, the new wet high-intensity magnetic separation system, the WIMS, which is a separate plant, is again effectively complete and in commissioning, as is the new auxiliary ilmenite plant. So basically everything is sort of in the commissioning phase, running through the different levels of commissioning at the moment, and we anticipate putting ore through the wet concentrator plant and dredge out the wet concentrator plant at the end of April, excuse me. The next pages, 11, 12, 13 and 14, show different aspects of the expansion. So you can see the dredge on page 11. It's a much larger, stronger dredge, and we can go through the details of that if anybody wants later on in the call. The wet concentrated plant, again, is a very large wet concentrated plant. We have worked hard to ensure that all the lessons learned in the design and execution of phase one were incorporated into the design and development of the wet concentrator plant for phase two, and believe that it has the capacity to move smoothly up its ramp up curve. Page 13 just shows you the new facilities that are in place in at the processing and the mineral separation plant. The new belt filter, new auxiliary ilmenite plant, new WIMS plant, and new storage facilities. And then there's further subsequent pages on those. So then moving on to page 18, which is just a review of the market situation. It was quite a roller coaster during 2012. We had very strong demand in the first half, and prices were improving, good price traction, but during the second half demand was more subdued as pigment producers went into an inventory destocking process and curtailed their production. So that destocking was more pronounced for high-grade feedstocks, as there is an economic advantage to using ilmenite and slag compared with rutile and synthetic rutile, and consequently the effect was less pronounced on ilmenite, which is our main product. Nonetheless, it was a pronounced effect, and we did feel it in terms of price in our price negotiations at the end of the year for the first half 2013. But we strongly believe that this is a destocking cycle, and as that cycle completes, the resumption of the long-term growth of the titanium feedstock market will resume. Zircon, likewise, had difficult market conditions throughout 2012. Pricing held up, but that was sort of held up really by the development of significant producer-held inventories. Sometime in the middle of the year, about August, the prices started to fall in zircon. They have fallen quite substantially, and we are now seeing a pickup in volume demand for zircon. We could see that see the start of that pickup of volume demand for zircon. We believe that will have to continue for quite a while before the buyer inventories are used up. and before the supplier unit, and there is an opportunity for price increase. So we don't really see a likely price increase in the future for zircon. So with that, perhaps we could ask Tony to talk to the more financial slides.
Thanks, Michael, and hello to everybody. I'll start with slide 20, where we look at the revenue and EBITDA. I thought that would be an interesting place to start and look at the progress that we've all made over the last 4 years since we started commercial production in 2009. Sales 2011 to 2012 are up 40%, and the EBITDA, which is tracked there, is up 38%. So it's just interesting to look back over the progress. Moving to slide 21, the increase in revenue is $67 million, up to $234 million in 2012. This reflects a slight decline in volumes, but prices are up approximately 50% on 2011 prices. The cost of sales are up, but we'll talk about that in the next slide. No real surprises on the financing line. We're continuing to pay senior biannually, senior debt, and we expect to start to pay subordinated debt within the next 18 months. I'll come to that in a later slide as well. The foreign exchange loss has been reduced, which is good. Mostly our foreign exchange loss arises on the euro debt, which is on our balance sheet, and to some extent a small amount of rand deposits. But as you can see, it's a very small number on our P&L. And so we end up with a profit this year of just under $53 million and a tax charge of 3.3 arising in the mining subsidiary in MoMA. We also pay royalty and payroll tax. So as we continue to grow as a profitable company in Mozambique, MoMA will become a significant revenue earner for the Mozambican government as well. And we end up then with a profit after tax of $49 million, which is just over double the profit of 2011. And the EBITDA number is $98.9 million with an earnings per share of 2 cents per share. Moving on then to the cash and operating costs review. The cost of sales and operating costs at $154 million are up about 35% on 2011. So in common with the way that we've approached this in previous years, we adjust out the freight because we make some sales on a CIF basis to customers, and the conversations that I have with analysts and investors typically revolve around FOB pricing, i.e. sale from sale point at MoMA. That takes us to $151 million and then adjusting for non-cash costs of depreciation and share-based payments, we get back to $129 million. So $129 million is higher than we had flagged earlier in the year, but partly that's because we had a very successful shipping program in the fourth quarter. Our year-end stocks are down to about 30,000 tons in the sheds, which is a very low level. And so the 5.9 million further adjustment that you see there reflects costs that were incurred in 2011 but are reflected in the 2012 P&L because it's 2012 when the sales took place. So the cost to run the business during the year was $123 million. That's the total group cash cost. Now that's still ahead of guidance, partly for the two reasons that we set out just below on that slide. We had to hire additional heavy mobile equipment, plus get additional pumps and pipework and people to complete the climb up the dune that Michael referred to earlier in the presentation. This is very nearly completed, and the most expensive part of that would have been the building of a berm on the side of the hill, which is completely finished. In addition, compared to 2011, we had two supplementary mining operations, one of which is now fully decommissioned as we work our way through the commissioning of the wet concentrator plant, and in the coming weeks we'll be starting to bore through that plant. It's difficult, and we haven't quantified the total amount of these, but they do reflect, they do explain why there's an increase in the previous years to some extent, and these costs are non-recurring. There's also some level of cost, which is also hard to quantify, which has been expensed, but reflects the preparation and manning up for the expansion, which is reported to the P&L. And much of the focus of the company and management in the last couple of years has been on expansion and getting the production up. MoMA is a low-cost producer, and I think you'll see a significant continued focus on costs as we're driving efficiencies as we work our way through the expansion and we close that out. Moving on then to slide 23, we've got, same as in previous years, the EBITDA bridge. Really, this is a reflection of the points that we've already discussed. The EBITDA has gone from $72 million up to $99 million, largely on foot of increasing product prices, and the cost movements are a reflection of the non-recurring costs that I mentioned, but also some cost inflation, largely in labour. Slide 24 then shows the cash operating cost pie. About half the costs refer to labour and repairs and maintenance. I'd expected labour to be slightly higher at that 28%, but that's partly because the additional costs that we incurred in 2012 were for repairs and were reported to repairs and maintenance, but refer to the additional costs to climb up the side of the hill, the side of the dune. Moving then on to the balance sheet on page 25, most of the movements here refer to the expansion as well. Plant, property and equipment additions amounted to $192 million, less depreciation of 19. And that gives us a movement of $173 million, taking us to a total investment of $887 million for PPE. The deferred tax I've already talked about as we continue to grow the profitability of the company, we'll be using our deferred tax assets. No major changes really in stocks or trade receivables. The stock movement of 25.8 to 22.4 reflects a reduction in the product stock element and to a lesser extent a compensating increase in the investment in spares and consumables. Again, mindful that we're going to be more active in 2013 because of the expansion. And then, of course, the cash is lower than at the end of 2011 as we continue to invest in the expansion as well. Of course, that will close out this year. Moving on then to slide 26, which is the group debt. Total debt, $324 million. Really no surprises whatsoever in this. The senior debt is $107 million and the subordinated is $217 million. As I mentioned earlier, we're continuing to pay the senior and roll up the subordinated debt and the subordinated interest. So that's why there's a relatively modest movement in 2012. We expect to pay a significant amount of sub-debt within the next 18 months. Kenmare is well on the journey transitioning from a company in development into operations. So we felt it was appropriate to have additional lines of credit at PLC level. So hence, last week we were pleased to be in a position to announce that we put in place a $40 million facility with Absa Barclays. This remains undrawn, but it's available to be used as required. So then the last slide I'll talk to is slide 27, which simply summarizes the highlights that we've included in the prelims that we've released this morning. Really just touches on the key elements that Michael and I spoke about earlier, the increase in revenue by 40%, EBITDA up 38%, and a profit of just under $50 million. Mine safety record has been good, as Michael mentioned, particularly compared to our peers, which is how we look at it. And in the year, we produced 574,000 tons of ilmenite and 47,000 tons of zircon. we're very near the top of the hill. So a lot of the issues that Michael talked about in terms of operation and I spoke about in terms of costs that related to the climb up the dune are coming to an end. We have the facility that I mentioned with Absa Barclays, and we're moving into the commissioning phase. We're in the commissioning phase of phase two, and we'll be moving into hot commissioning in the next few weeks, which will all be very interesting. So that's the end of the trading update. Michael, back to you.
Okay, well, we'd like to open the call up to any questions that you would like to ask.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the hash key or the pound sign. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. Des Calella from RBC is online with a question.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, gents, and thanks for the presentation. Just two questions, if I may. The first is, looking at costs this year, maybe some indication of what kind of inflation you see in things like labor and some of the other components in that cost pie that you put on the slide. And then maybe a question for Eamon, if you can give us a kind of feel for what China is looking like for both TiO2 and zircon.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Des. I'll ask Tony to respond in terms of cost inflation, and then Eamon can follow you with the rest of your question.
Okay, well, the labor really is the big one that we watch in costs, Des. And we had our labor negotiation in July, when you remember there was a lot of disquiet in South Africa. And this year it happened really quite seamlessly. Our labor increase in real terms was, I think, about 7 or 8%, and so we regard that as a reasonably good result. I think that the whole mine is settling down, and the labour relations are also settling down.
And just given the expansion that's going to come 2013-2014, we're going to get some abatement in unit costs anyway, just through So just a stab, and maybe you can't do that, but if you were to look at what unit costs might do over, say, 2013-2014, can you give us any, without maybe giving a forecast, any kind of projection of what the market should look for on that?
Yeah, okay. Well, the cost per ton is less than $200 a ton in 2012. I prefer not to give a firm number, Des, because we haven't come up with guidance. But on the other hand, in 2013, the kind of range of cash operating costs that we're looking at is something in the range of maybe 150 to 160. So it's also a function of production.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe, Des, I could just add to Tony's response a little bit on that. In 2012, the unit cost was affected by, A, the manning up associated with bringing people on and training them up for expansion, and this onerous climb up the hill.
Yeah.
So as we moved through 2013 and 2014, that manning up sort of additional cost that's associated with expansion, that cost negative associated with expansion will move to a cost positive associated with greater production. And the move up the hill and all the additional costs associated with that is effectively over already. So we would expect things to be better.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hi, Des.
Hey, Eamon.
Just on China, Des, we've seen quite a pick-up in activity in China since the New Year, the Chinese New Year holiday ended about 2 weeks ago. So, we've had a big increase in the number of inquiries, sales inquiries that we're getting. I would say we're probably getting half a dozen inquiries a day. And we're actually just in the process of agreeing a sale, an ilmenite sale into China, probably to go at the end of this month with two customers. and there was a third customer also waiting in the wings as well, but we just didn't have the volume available. Also on the zircon, we're seeing an improvement in demand as well. I think there's been some restocking taking place, tile production appears to be picking up again. And again, we've got some sales, zircon sales, that we're planning to make into China over the next few weeks.
Okay, so it's looking like it might have bottomed for zircon.
Yes, yeah, okay. That would be our view. Just back, sorry, on the TiO2, I mean, I just read something this morning that car sales in China are up by 20% in the first 2 months of the year. So, you know, the automotive sector is a big driver of TiO2 demand in China. So that's a very positive, signal that things are on the way back up for TiO2 as well.
Thanks, Eamon. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
Jeremy Dibb from Canaccord Genuity is online with a question.
Hi, guys. I saw that you increased your PP&E by $192 million over the year. I was just wondering how much more CapEx are you expecting in 2013, and is most of that going to fall in H1 or any to be spent in H2?
Yeah, Molten Tony speaking here, Jeremy, responding to your question. Probably in the order of $50 to $60 million, principally in H1, and you're absolutely right. That's the key period when we'll be closing out costs for the expansion.
Okay, and that's $50 to $60 million in terms of PP&E increase rather than cash spend.
No, it's $50 to $60 million cash spend.
Okay, so does that include that increase in payables that you've had?
Yes, it does. You're quite right. If you look at the balance sheet, you'll see that there's a big increase in liabilities from...
So your cash spend basically has only gone up by $164 million, although your PP&E's increased on the balance sheet by $191.
That's right. And you need to adjust out as well the trade and other payables. So there's $29 going up to 52. So the principal reason why that increase is reflected there is because we've got a higher level of creditors at the end of the year that relate to the expansion.
Okay, so the $50 to $60 million guidance for CapEx is cash.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Richard Morgan from Mirabaud Securities is online with a question.
Morning. Really, a couple of questions following up what's just been said on that CapEx for this year. With the expansion now commissioning, where do you see the final number coming in, sort of versus the 350, which was kind of the last guidance? Second follow-up question is, Tony mentioned a number there in an earlier question of 150 to 160 of cash costs. Was that per ton of product, or was that $1 million total for the year? And finally, you, Michael, talked about zircon. I mean, what's your best guess to run down those producer stocks?
Maybe I'll take them. I'll take the middle one first, because I was talking about absolute dollars to run the business in 2013. I'm not talking about it on a per ton basis.
Okay.
In terms of the outturn cost, in the chairman's statement, you'll have noted that we didn't give an update number there. I could see it being sort of an extra $10 million plus, but we haven't given an exact number, because we are in the process of closing out the contracts with the remaining contractors. I mean, what I can say is that the physical facilities are all there, they're all complete, and we're down to really commissioning and remaining pipes and the like. So, you know, I don't see a big blowout, but I do see some closeout conversations with contractors that will need to take place before I can give a definitive number on that, Richard.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Eamon? Or sorry, Michael?
Yeah, well, Richard, just in terms of zircon, you know, we sort of just have a general feeling here that it'll take towards the end of the year before stocks revert to a level that will allow prices move back up again. And you know, that's predicated also by the fact that we understand there have been significant curtailments of production from Iluka, from RBM, etc. So given those and the consequent stock rundown, we see towards the end of the year that there'll be risk for the zircon market to revert to a more normal supply-demand situation.
Okay, thanks, and I appreciate it. It's actually quite a difficult question to put an exact answer onto.
Yeah. Thanks.
Karen Crawley from Davy is online with a question.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Just two questions. With respect to the new mining pond, could you talk to us a little bit about the path? And I suppose what I'm trying to understand is the level of slimes along the path that you've projected for the new dredge and WCP. And also on the expansion, you talked about last year that most of the additional capacity had been secured with customers, or customers had agreed to take the additional tonnage, the majority of the additional tonnage. Can you describe a little bit more what the status on that is now, whether more customers have come on looking for some of that incremental volume, or indeed whether prior agreements, customers now perhaps might be looking to postpone some of the shipment of that volume. I understand it's probably a bit of a sensitive issue, but if you could talk to that, I'd appreciate it. And I suppose finally a third question. Eamon, you were saying that, you know, good demand recently from China, but outside of China, are you seeing a little bit more demand from Western pigment producers? Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Karen. I'll deal with the first question, and then Eamon, if you could respond to the second two. The dredge path for Wet Concentrator Plant B, it moves generally northwards over the Namalope Slopes area. That area is characterized by having slightly lower face heights and slightly, but only slightly higher slimes levels in total. And so I think the average slimes level is like 7.2% for the whole of the Namalope Slopes area. So it's not a significantly higher slimes level than we have encountered ever before, and it's certainly significantly less than the slimes levels that we've been dealing with as we climbed up the side of slope during the second half of 2012. So we believe that they're eminently mineable, and at the rate that we need, given the capacity of the new dredge. And so, in terms of cutter power, we've taken the new dredge from 280 kilowatts on the cutter to 930, We really don't see that we're going to have any significant difficulty mining this material. It's similar to what we have mined before, but we're mining it with a much larger, stronger dredge. Eamon, do you want to talk about the market situation?
Yeah, just Karen, on the new production from the expansion, the bulk of that material has already been committed. The remaining material that we need to still commit, there's very strong interest from various customers for that material. In terms of, I suppose, timing of the ramp up of those contracts, because of the destocking that's taking place in the industry right now, and with the delays that we've encountered on the expansion, essentially it's quite manageable, in that respect. We do expect that by the time the production starts to come out of the plant in quarter two, that the inventory destocking situation will start to abate, and customers will start to be taking bigger volumes at that stage. With regards to your third question, demand outside of China, I suppose it's very much customer specific. I suppose industry wide. you know, the pigment producers are curtailing their production right now. I think the industry operating rates are probably at around 70%. But the large pigment producers have got, you know, multiple plants, and they're choosing to run some of those plants harder than others. So, you know, we're finding some customers can take the full volume, and in fact are looking to accelerate shipments, while others are looking to, you know, at some delays. But given that we've finished the year with very low inventory levels, and we've had these production issues in the first quarter, you know, we don't have huge amount of volumes that we need to be pushing into the market at the present time. So, you know, we're continuing to supply our core customers with products during quarter one. And as I said, we have quite strong interest coming from China in the past couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks, Eamon. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Aaron.
Peter Ekblom from Bank of America Merrill Lynch is online with a question.
Hi, everyone. Thanks very much for taking the questions. I've got a few to follow up on. Firstly, the costs of training new personnel for the Phase 2 expansion. I'm just wondering why that was not capitalized rather than expensed in 2012, just so maybe we could get a better understanding of what the underlying profitability of the Phase 1 was. And then on ilmenite price as well, you've said you're seeing increased inquiries out of China. I was wondering if prices have actually gone up. Are you doing, you know, these new orders at higher prices than what you were doing in, say, Jan or December? And then third question, on the auxiliary circuits, you said that you're going to be turning one off this year. Can we assume that the other auxiliary circuit will remain in place? And then finally, actually, sorry, two more questions. The replacement of your dredges on Phase 1, which you've spoken about in the past as potentially replacing those, what's the development there? Have you put the order in? You know, has the cash been spent? When can we expect those new dredges? And then finally, can you just talk about what your view is on a more longer-term basis in terms of cash flows from this asset when Phase 2 is up and running, looking at further expansion versus maybe dividends, you know, how you weighing that up going forward? Thanks.
So, Fredson, with capitalization on
it. Yeah, look, I mean, as we start to clock up significant costs in 2013, there will be some of those capitalized. You're absolutely right. The training element of the costs in 2012 is a modest enough number. I mean, there's a lot of debate that goes on about companies that just capitalize costs, whereas I think we've taken a more transparent approach where these costs were not big and we've simply reported them to the P&L. But there's also time that people who are spending on operations, they're doing their day job, but they're contributing to expansions here. And it's very difficult to pull that out. So I don't have a number to split it out. When we move into the commissioning phase and there's separate commissioning teams and the like in 2013, they will be capitalized. So I suppose my point is that it is a contributor to some extent to the cost increase in 2012. But the bigger ones are the ones that I outlined. The bigger ones relate to, compared to 2011, the supplemental dry mining and the climb up the dunes. And I'll just answer your third question before I hand back to Michael. You asked about the auxiliary dry mining, the second circuit. The second circuit has been closed. The first circuit we intend to continue to run through 2013 and will continue. The supplemental mining, we continue to monitor that, but we are planning to run that in 2013. So that's questions one and three, I think.
And two was on the ilmenite pricing. Generally, I mean, you know, with our main contracted customers, we've agreed pricing in the range of, you know, mid to high 200s for the first half of the year. With regards to where the spot market in China is right now, it's probably close to the bottom end of that range, but we see that as the floor, and we certainly see things recovering. You know, we've already seen some recovery there. And over the past couple of weeks, we've seen the Indian government impose a 10% export tax on ilmenite out of India, and also the Vietnamese government has increased the export tax from 30 to 40%. So these are starting to have an influence on pricing levels in the Chinese market. And we think in, you know, in the weeks and months ahead that we'll see improvements on current levels.
But at the moment, if there is an increase, it's been a very muted increase.
Yeah.
So we're not trying to paint a picture of a gung-ho market, Cedar, but rather a market that seems to have bottomed and is showing first tentative signs of improvements.
Okay.
Dredges for phase one. We have agreed the specification of a replacement dredge for one of the dredges in phase one with the manufacturer. And that specification is very similar. The manufacturer is the company that manufactures the dredge for phase two. And the specification is very similar to the dredge for phase two with some slight amendments associated with the deeper mining faces associated with the areas where Dredge Pond A will be dredging for the next 12 years. However, we would like to actually test the dredge for phase two in operation just to see if there are any wrinkles before finally agreeing the specification. And because of, for all the reasons that we have outlined previously, completion of the expansion dragged on a little bit, we have held back with that order just to make sure that this dredge is exactly what we want, and if there are any modifications to do, that we incorporate those into the initial design spec. As far as cash flows from the enhanced operation, our board has a strong view that they would like to see cash flows being paid and being paid at a reasonably early stage, and so I think that they will be keen to develop a prudent but sensible dividend policy as soon as they possibly can.
Okay, are there any complications with bringing cash back from Mozambique to the PLC level?
No, as I understand it, it's completely agreed in all of the documents and all of the agreements with government. So that's all fine.
Okay, and then sorry, just one follow-up question, just technically. When would you be negotiating the second half pricing? Would that be sort of June time, or would be a bit earlier than that?
Generally around June. Yes, but, you know, that could run into July. But
okay.
Talking June, July.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thanks, Peter.
Bye, Peter.
Muna Mulea from Marion Capital is online with a question.
Hello. I think most of my questions have been answered. Probably two just follow-up questions. One is on phase one. When do you expect phase one to get to capacity? I think the 800,000 capacity, I think that there are a few disruptions. Do you expect disruption this year as well? And then on the expansion phase, I think you said earlier that you start commissioning around about the end of April. Should you expect by the end of Q2 that will be at capacity for phase two as well? And probably that's the other two questions. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mina. Phase one, 2013, during the first quarter of 2013, we were still completing the transition from the Namalope slopes to the high dune area, and consequently that has inhibited our production during during quarter one. In addition to that, we have not as yet got all the electrical voltage stabilization systems in place for the first quarter when we've had raining season, and consequently we forecasted lower operating levels, operating utilization and lower throughputs during quarter one than you would expect at capacity. So 2013 will not have a full capacity year for phase one. On the other hand, as we move out of the rainy period, and as we move off the Dunal onto the fully onto the Dunal Plateau, we see no reason whatsoever why Phase 1 would not operate at full capacity. As we move into the raining season next year, all of this equipment will be in place, and we would hope it will stabilize voltage to the level that that we can continue to operate at capacity. Phase 2, Phase 2 is just coming on stream. We have designed it, we believe, with margin which will allow it easily operate at capacity. So, fingers crossed, and I'm touching the table here, but we don't see any reason why the equipment that has been put in place for Phase 2 does not operate at capacity, and we are anticipating the ramp-up to be completed by the end of the year.
That's by the end of the year. And I mean, would you expect quarter three production for Phase 1 to be more or less in line with capacity, quarter three and quarter four? Are there any disruptions that we should expect there?
Quarter three we would expect to operate at capacity.
And Q4 as well?
Q4 you're running into the raining season. Like, I mean, that is, so Q4 is dependent on the success of both ourselves and the government's voltage stabilization endeavors.
Okay. And is there any disruption that you expect from the expansion into Phase 1?
Yes, there is. And that's occurring in Q1 and a little bit in Q2.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
James Bateman from JP Morgan is online with a question.
Hi guys, thanks for the presentation. Most of my questions have been answered by now. Just following on very briefly from the previous question, I was just wondering if you could give an idea of a sort of total overall level of production from Phase 2 between the start of the ramp up and the hopeful fully ramping up by the end of 2013.
Yeah, look, I mean, that's a terribly difficult question to answer, James, in that we've never ramped up this equipment ever before, so it's the exact shape of that curve is a hard thing to predict.
Yep.
And your guess is probably as good as mine on what the shape of that ramp up curve will be. And so we've been very careful to not give a response to precisely that question.
Okay. Fair enough. I suppose. Thanks anyway.
No problem. Thanks.
Fletcher Tully from Goldman Sachs is online with a question.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks very much for your presentation. Just a quick question. How many days year to date have you lost due to power reliability issues?
Thanks, Fletcher. Your question is how many days lost to power?
Yeah.
What was the period that you asked that?
Oh, so January 1 through to today.
Oh, of this year?
Yes.
I don't know. Just
from January 13 and February 13.
No, from January 1, 2013 to the 11th or 12th of March 2013.
And on to the 27th of February, three and a half
days to the 5th of March.
Okay.
Until the 25th of February. Between the 1st of January and the 25th of February, 3.5 days. Now,
okay.
The thing about it, Fletcher, is that, you know, if you cut it just down into 3.5 days, it doesn't seem like that much. But, you know, there is, you have a disruption in the start-up post each one of these events as well.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-on question. What sort of costs are involved with starting up? Because I understand that the sand tends to settle, and then there can be quite significant costs with ramping up production every time you experience one of these power outages. And I was just wondering whether you can give any guidance on that.
There's not a specific additional cost in terms of new equipment or consumables or anything like that, but it costs you in that you've lost production during the time when you're desanding the process and then starting to get production going and rebalancing that production again. And in addition to that, you know, if you've got teams of your engineering teams are out spending all night desanding the lines, you know, they're not going to be just as hot as they would have previously been in terms of their planned maintenance the next day. And so, you know, sometimes we have to bring in additional teams to do planned maintenance, to catch up on planned maintenance because everybody's so exhausted doing these sandings. So, you know, there will be a many-fold improvement. There are many benefits associated with this voltage stabilization equipment that's going in place. You know, it'll have a lot of positive effects on the overall management of the project.
Okay, excellent. And all these power outages have come from lightning strikes in the areas. Is that correct? And it's not really through any shortcoming of the infrastructure?
Well, no. I think that's partially correct. You know, they're mainly from lightning strikes. But, you know, it's a shortcoming of the infrastructure that a lightning strike 1,000 kilometers away, you know, presents a dip to us, you know, as a receiver of electricity. And so improvements to the infrastructure, such as putting capacitor banks in Nampula, which will isolate us from other spurs on the distribution line, you know, will have a positive effect. So that's why the improvements to the infrastructure that we and EDM are doing at the moment will have some positive effect.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Fletcher. Bye.
As a reminder, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. We have no further questions at this time.
Okay, guys. Well, thanks everybody for attending and listening to us explain the situation through 2012. You know, it was a very interesting year. Prices went from, you know, a relatively low area at the start to very high levels in the middle of the year and then subdued again towards the end of the year. So it's quite a roller coaster in terms of the market. We transitioned our dredge pond, you know, up the side of a hill and onto a dunar plateau. We have brought the expansion, phase three expansion, and I know it's a little bit late and costing more than people had originally anticipated, but we've brought that through to its commissioning phase. And so it's been a very eventful year, and we look forward to speaking with you all and briefing you as we move through into the actual ramp up of this expansion and hopefully see improvements in the market price for the commodities, which we really anticipate happening pretty, you know, in the relatively near future. So thanks everybody for coming, and goodbye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.